Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And one of the ways in which class matters is that we are involved in an ongoing struggle against corporations, big banks, and the wealthy. Right, certainly Big Pharma, and others to basically override national sovereignty. And there have been many manifestations of this. There, of course, was the fight against the World Trade Organization.
And NAFTA. There was a fight against NAFTA.
And the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There was the Battle of Seattle in 1999. All these are efforts of working people recognizing that there is a threat to national sovereignty and that we have to fight those who are trying to create a world order that is dominated directly by corporations rather than corporations just controlling individual nation states. So with that in mind, we wanted to talk about one of the latest efforts to trump national sovereignty with corporate supremacy, and that is the WHO Treaty, the World Health Organization, not the rock band The Who. All that we're not overly concerned about the rock band The Who, but the World Health Organization is really putting on an ongoing effort to try to override national sovereignty in the name of fighting pandemics. And one of the people that's been fighting against this, she's practically a one-woman army, is Dr.
Really?
Meryl Nass. Meryl Nass is a physician in Maine. She was instrumental in exposing a lot of the wrongdoing during the recent COVID epidemic.
They went after her license.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And she also exposed a lot of the harms caused by the anthrax vaccine, another experimental vaccine that was used on our troops during the Gulf War.
The first one.
Yeah, the first one, yeah, Gulf War One. And she did a great job of exposing that, and she's just been a real firebrand and still is. And you can find the articles we're going to share at her Substack page, Meryl Nass, that's M-E-R-Y-L, Nass, all one word, .substack.com. And the first article we want to share is entitled, We Did It. 22 attorneys general in the U.S. have told Joe Biden that the WHO, W-H-O, will not be making public policy in their states.
Yay! I wish Illinois was one of them.
Yeah, exactly. But still, this is good. And chances are you have not heard about this in the news, even though that's 22 states' attorney general protesting the pending treaty with the World Health Organization.
They're probably the same ones that wanted to protect the U.S. border, I bet. Right, yeah, that signed on
more
to
or
say,
less, yeah. And also a lot of them have opposed the censorship industrial complex and so on.
Yeah.
In the introduction of the article, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but she mentions that there's a couple of bills in Congress, House Resolution 1425 and Senate Bill 444, that she is advocating in favor. What these bills would do, the official summary says that this bill establishes that any convention or agreement on pandemic-related issues reached by the World Health Assembly, WHA, the international meeting at which the World Health Organization's proposals are to be considered, pursuant to a specified negotiating body, shall be deemed to be a treaty requiring the advice and consent of the Senate.
All right, that's kind of pathetic, though. That's right there in the Constitution.
Right.
So this is another pathetic attempt to take something that's blatantly unconstitutional, like the president waging wars without Congress, or the CIA spying on Americans against the Fourth Amendment, and then they do their little reforms, right? The War Powers Act, or the FISA Act, right? Or this.
Right.
No, this is a treaty. Obviously, it's a treaty. It's the biggest treaty the United States has ever signed, basically. It's turning over the entire sovereignty and governance of the United States to an unelected body,
right?
World global body, and saying, well, you know, we're going to subject all of our citizens to the dictates of this organization. Our citizens have no say in its governance or its edicts.
Right.
And again, it's the WHO that gets to declare the pandemic. And then after it declares the pandemic, it gets to say, now you have to do this because we declared a pandemic. So now everyone has to go out in their backyard and dig a 6-foot hole and stay there until we say to come out. I mean,
right.
They could say that. It's unlikely they'll say it, but could say it. Because if Biden signs this treaty, then he's turning over the governance of the United States to this unelected body. So the Senate, Congress, should be saying, no, absolutely not. Not, oh, well, please bring it to us.
Right, yeah.
So that Big Pharma can bribe enough of us that we will consent, basically.
Yeah. So Merrill Nass reproduces this letter from the 22 attorneys general, and we want to share this with you since you probably have not heard about this before. It's addressed, of course, to President Biden, and it begins, "As the chief legal officers of our states, we oppose two instruments under negotiation that could give the World Health Organization, or WHO, unprecedented and unconstitutional powers over the United States and her people."
That's what Congress should say.
Yes. Justice Neil Gorsuch remarked that the COVID-19 pandemic may have been, quote, the greatest intrusions on civil liberties in the peacetime history of this country, unquote.
Even the wartime.
Yeah.
I mean, suspension of habeas corpus is bad, but we've already lost that with Obama's 2011.
You mean the Defense Authorization Act of 2011.
Yes. Thank you. We already lost habeas corpus in peacetime. But my point is that I don't know of anything more draconian than this that's been done in wartime either.
Right. The letter goes on, and it has kind of a typical for conservative politicians reference to the Chinese Communist Party, saying that the WHO failed to hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable for its lies and deceptions during the pandemic.
You can always tell that it's reactionaries. They don't call it the Communist Party of China, CPC.
Right.
They call it the CCP, invariably, instead of the correct name, CPC.
Yes. "Rather than learning from these failures, some inexplicably want to relinquish more power to unelected and unaccountable institutions. These proposed accords could radically transform the WHO's existing international health regulations, IHRs, and institute a new pandemic agreement or treaty."
And the WHO isn't supposed to have regulations. The WHO was set up in 1948 or whenever it was set up, as an advisory board, as a way to advise developing countries, hey, here's how you protect public health. You set up a sewage treatment system. You set up water treatment faculties.
Right.
You have proper maternal and child health care. This is what we recommend. Boom. That's
right.
It.
Yeah.
It wasn't, we're going to force you to take experimental drugs.
Yeah.
That's what it is now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that when it was set up. Now it's under the control of Bill Gates and Fauci and people like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is correct. "The current draft of the pandemic agreement purportedly serves as a negotiating text for international consideration. Although the latest iteration is far better than prior versions, it's still highly problematic. The fluid and opaque nature of these proceedings, moreover, could allow the most egregious provisions from past versions to return. Meanwhile, the IHR, that's again the International Health Regulations amendment process, has largely occurred behind closed doors as the working group considers hundreds of proposals."
That sounds like the TPP. Remember, Obama made it that any of the American negotiators that leaked or told Americans what they had every right to know could be put in prison.
Yeah.
Because the Obama administration, well, all of the administration, the blob, you know, the ruling class, it now considers the American people to be the enemy. That's why they call Edward Snowden a traitor.
Yeah.
You can't be a traitor for telling American people the facts they need to know.
Yeah, about unless what their own government is doing.
Right. Unless the government considers the American people to be the enemy. That's the definition of a traitor, someone who helps the enemy. The only people Edward Snowden helped were the American people. Therefore, our rulers think we are the enemy.
Yeah.
I mean, how could it be any clearer?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. "To varying degrees, these measures would threaten national sovereignty, undermine states' authority, and imperil constitutionally guaranteed freedoms. Ultimately, the goal of these instruments isn't to protect public health. It's to cede authority to the WHO, specifically its Director General, to restrict our citizens' rights to freedom of speech, privacy, movement, especially travel across borders, and informed consent. We therefore oppose such accords for several important reasons. First, the two proposed instruments would transform the WHO from an advisory, charitable organization into the world's governor of public health." That's
exactly
basically the point you made.
Yeah.
"The WHO currently lacks authority to enforce its recommendations."
Exactly.
Under proposed IHR amendments and the pandemic treaty, however, the WHO's Director General would achieve the power to unilaterally declare a public health emergency of international concern in one or more member nations. Such declarations can include perceived or potential emergencies other than pandemics.
That sounds like the Canadian law. This is pre-thought crime. Number one, they make thought crimes illegal. Number two, they make potential thought crimes illegal. This is the WHO version of the Canadian law.
Yeah, this is like that. And these perceived potential emergencies could include climate change, immigration, gun violence, or even quote-unquote emergencies involving plants, animals, or ecosystems. The more egregious versions of the proposals would authorize the Director General to dictate what must be done in response to a declared public health emergency of international concern. In other words, America's elected representatives would no longer set the nation's public health policies. Even watered down, these proposals would inappropriately cede American sovereignty to the WHO. Second, the federal government cannot delegate public health decisions to an international body. The U.S. Constitution doesn't vest responsibility for public health policy with the federal government. It reserves those powers for the states. Even if the federal government had such power, Article 2, Section 2 requires approval by the United States Senate, as you pointed out earlier. Third, the proposed IHR amendments and the pandemic treaty would lay the groundwork for a global surveillance infrastructure, ostensibly in the interests of public health, but with the inherent opportunity for control, as with communist China's social credit system. They have to throw in another dig against China.
Gosh.
But again, these are side issues. The overall message of this is pretty clear. The current draft instructs signatories to, quote, cooperate in accordance with national law in preventing misinformation and disinformation, unquote.
Censorship.
Yep. This is particularly dangerous given that your administration pressured and encouraged social media companies to suppress free speech during COVID-19. And then it's got a footnote to the Missouri v. Biden case that we've talked about on this program. The COVID-19 pandemic exposed fundamental flaws with the WHO and other public health institutions. These entities breached public trust and are unquestionably in need of reform. The proposed measures, however, would only exacerbate the WHO's underlying problems and enable more civil liberties violations during future emergencies, in scare quotes. Accordingly, we will resist any attempt to enable the WHO to directly or indirectly set public policy for our citizens, respectfully signed by the Attorney General of Montana, and then there's a whole bunch of other attorney generals, 22 in all, that have signed this letter.
Well, good for them.
Yes.
And who cares if they're going to be, we don't want to be like China. Of course you wouldn't want to be like their version of China. Actually,
right.
China and Russia just issued a joint decree supporting the WHO, which really makes me shudder.
Yeah.
Especially because Russia has already said they're not going to sign the treaties. Well, I think what they want to do is go back to the original, the same
right.
as the UN. We need to go back to international law and quit with this world-based order, and we need to go back to having the WHO being a global force for public health.
Yeah.
At least I think.
Right.
But I don't know, because all I know is you supporting the WHO right when they're trying to take over the entire world. That's wrong.
It was certainly bad messaging, if nothing else.
It certainly was.
Yeah. All right. Well, continuing, Meryl Nass also has another article on her website. Again, you can find it at merylnass.substack.com. And this article is actually from a newspaper called The Mail and Guardian, which is a Pan-Africanist newspaper. And the article is by the Pan-African Epidemic and Pandemic Working Group, a Pan-Africanist association of public health authorities in that continent.
I just want to give a shout out to the African countries. I can't remember which ones. It was one or two of them that put the kibosh on the last version of the WHO treaty.
Yeah.
This treaty that they're now trying to shove through again, they tried to shove it through before, and it was only one or two African countries that stood up and said, oh, no way.
Yeah.
And so good for them.
It may be among the ones that signed this letter here.
Yeah, I wish I could remember who it was.
Yeah.
I know it wasn't Tanzania, because during the COVID thing, the president of Tanzania express public doubt. He even did a PCR test on a goat and a papaya or something, and they both came back positive. And he said, oh, really?
Yeah.
This papaya has COVID? I smell a rat. And he ended up dead. And the person under the vice president, she became the president of Tanzania. And oh, look, she's totally on board. I think she was even a WEF young leader. Not sure about that, but I know that she was totally on board with everything. So I know Tanzania is not one of the ones that put the kibosh.
Yeah.
Would have been if they hadn't killed the president.
Right. And for the benefit of our listeners, the WEF is the World Economic Forum, another globalist group, highly influential, and is actually involved in setting this agenda with the World Health Organization.
Right, but they have no power the way they're trying to give to the WHO.
Yeah, they work through other groups.
They're like a think tank.
Right, although they don't have power directly, but they have a lot of national leaders in their organization.
Oh, yes, you know, like I just said, the one I'm
Justin
pretty
Trudeau,
sure.
Many
pretty
others.
Sure, yeah, Justin Trudeau, Kaja Kyla of Estonia, the one in New Zealand that was so horrible, she was a WEF protege. And actually, I think the one in Moldova, the one who's a Romanian citizen, but somehow she's the president of Moldova, she's a WEF leader.
Yeah.
And the one in Georgia. So the prime minister and the president of Georgia are on opposite sides of this NGO thing, right?
Right.
But she's for the NGOs and she's a WEF young leader.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
they have a lot of influence through their puppets. I'm just saying they don't have the legal ability to order entire countries around.
Sure. Yet. Not directly. Yet. That's right. Right.
But this is what the WHO's going for.
Yeah. So this article is entitled Plea to African Union, Halt Votes on WHO Pandemic Agreement and International Health Regulations Amendments. And then it's addressed to the Ministers of Health of the African Union. The Pan-Africa Epidemic and Pandemic Working Group calls on the African Union to table a motion to postpone the votes for the draft World Health Organization Pandemic Agreement and amendments to the International Health Regulations. The Working Group is a network of senior African academics from a variety of disciplines committed to advocating for sound public health policies at the national, regional, and global levels. It has come to our notice that the WHO is finalizing negotiations on the draft pandemic agreement, formerly called the Pandemic Treaty, and amendments to the IHR. These instruments are designed to provide the WHO with new and greater powers. More specifically, they would give the WHO Director General authority to personally declare a public health emergency of international concern, and thereafter to exercise unprecedented sweeping powers over all state parties to the proposed instruments. We are particularly concerned about five issues. Number one, conflicts of interest. The WHO is significantly privately funded by corporations and individuals based in wealthy countries who directly benefit from the pharmaceutical and digital health aspects of the proposals in the two instruments.
Can we say Bill Gates?
Well, actually they do, in
oh,
just
good.
A moment.
Okay.
Yeah, you nailed it. In addition, much of WHO's program is now determined by its largest funders, wealthy countries with strong pharma sectors, like the U.S. and Germany, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, through specified funding under which the WHO works for the purpose for which the funding was given. As such, the views of the vast majority of states have very little impact on the actual operations of the WHO, and this is a clear erosion of their national sovereignty.
Sure is.
Yep.
Everyone can see this, except for Joe Biden's United States and the 100 countries that Joe Biden administration is bribing. 100 countries are bribing to sign this thing. They're using our tax money instead of helping us to bribe other countries to sign a bill to give over national sovereignty to the WHO.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, could anything be more egregious than that?
Yeah,
I swear.
It's shameful.
Yes.
Their concern number two is the poor WHO COVID-19 response track record.
Indeed.
The WHO's track record in the COVID-19 response is poor, including, one, policies such as lockdowns that have been previously acknowledged by the WHO itself to cause significant collateral harm and having disproportionately negative effects on low-income populations and countries in Africa. Two, discouraging the use of affordable repurposed drugs and promoting new drugs under emergency use authorization. And of course, the repurposed drugs include ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which were proven to be very effective against COVID.
And more importantly, they'd been proven to be safe because they'd both been around for decades.
Yes.
And been taken by billions of people.
Yeah.
But remdesivir, actually, the only time that was ever tested was in Africa for Ebola, and it killed half of the subjects, so they stopped the trial.
Yeah.
That was that one.
Number three, promoting mass and often mandatory vaccination against COVID-19 of African populations known to be very low risk due to young age and already having immunity, thereby diverting resources from malaria, tuberculosis, HIV/AIDS, and other urgent health problems on the continent, and violating the right to informed consent. Four, inaction and lack of accountability regarding vaccine injuries and deaths.
Well, they're going to fix that censorship.
Well, right.
Yeah, they're going to impose censorship, so you can't talk about it.
Well, it's like they've already done in this country.
Exactly.
Five, disruption of economies and education, entrenching future poverty and multi-generational inequality, and expanding national debt directly correlated to the debt crisis in Africa today. And six, promoting censorship in the guise of tackling quote-unquote misinformation and disinformation, thereby stifling civil liberties and academic freedom.
Yay.
You know how closely this parallels the letter from the 22 attorneys general. So here we have conservative Republican, mostly, attorneys general in the United States, and
they've got the
countries
same criticism
of Africa, yeah. Right, making basically the same criticisms.
Yeah, but I don't know why everyone leaves out the part about if anyone goes in the jungles of the Congo and finds a scary new disease, or Papua New Guinea, or wherever, if they find a scary new disease anywhere, they have to share it with bioweapons research labs all around the world to save us.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane. Why would you take a brand new virus that has never caused any problem because it's been in the jungles of wherever, you know, the Amazon or wherever.
Right.
And then spread it all over the world in the name of protecting humanity. It is the same people that are speaking out against this. The doctors in Africa, the attorney generals in the United States. It is the people with some common sense and aren't bought off.
Right.
That can look at this and go, well, this, no.
Yeah.
This is just wrong.
Yeah. The African doctors continue, thus the COVID-19 response has already centralized control and further concentrated wealth in high-income countries while impoverishing low-income populations, including those in Africa. It has expanded an increasingly colonialist agenda in Africa with substantial negative economic, human rights, socio-cultural, and political consequences. The lockdown regulations were a class-based and unscientific instrument, disproportionately harmful to lower-income people and useless for crowded informal settings as in urban parts of Africa.
Although, if you're outside, you're safe.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, African governments were subjected to intense pressure to merely adhere to protocols formulated outside the continent and in total disregard of their demographic, economic, and climatic context. This rendered them powerless in public health matters in their own jurisdictions, which was tantamount to the eroding of their health sovereignty with predictable and harmful consequences.
Although, remember that we brought up that the WHO issued these regulations, then the WHO investigated the results, then the WHO issued a report saying, as it turns out, the countries that didn't follow the regulations did better than the countries that did.
Right.
Then the WHO totally and completely ignored their own investigation and report and is reaching for this paragraph. Right there, you can see that this isn't in the interest of public health because their own researchers found out that they were wrong.
Yeah, and many of these countries that did resist were in Africa, and they had, some of them had negligible COVID.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So when they say this, it's actually, compared to the countries that did abide by the WHO regulations, African countries did a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. Continuing with the letter, it is therefore evident that the WHO pandemic agreement and amendments to the IHR, if signed in their current form by the requisite number of WHO member states in May or June of 2024, will entrench all the measures above in international law, institutionalizing the withdrawal of health sovereignty and economic sovereignty from African states. Concern number three. procedural injustice, democratic illegitimacy, and inequitable outcomes. The adoption of any amendments to the IHR at the 77th World Health Assembly in May 2024 are being processed in an unlawful manner. Article 55-2 of the IHR sets out the procedure for amending these regulations, and it quotes it, "The text of any proposed amendment shall be communicated to all state parties by the Director General at least 4 months before the Health Assembly at which it is proposed for consideration."
4 months, huh? And it's May 24th. Have we gotten it yet? Did we get it 4 months ago and we just didn't know?
Yeah, right, exactly. The deadline for the WHO's Director General to circulate the package of proposed amendments to the IHR to state parties lawfully in advance of the 77th Assembly was January 27th, 2024, and yet the text is still being negotiated with a version released to the public in mid-April. As such, the agenda item of passing the amendments to the IHR cannot be legitimately tabled at the Assembly, as tabling it without complying with the requisite 4 months rule would jeopardize procedural justice, democratic legitimacy, and equitable outcomes for all. The review time is essential for each state party to assess national health, financial, legal, and human rights implications, and the abrogation of this rule by the WHO disproportionately discriminates against lower-income countries with fewer resources to rapidly assess such consequences. The pandemic agreement, also still under negotiation, was intended to be delivered by March 29, 2024, for a similar intent of providing time for reflection prior to commitment to vote. Concern 4, the inadequacy of a one-size-fits-all approach. Flexibility and careful public health planning are crucial given the highly diverse economic, demographic, cultural, and environmental factors that render the current WHO one-size-fits-all approach grossly inadequate. In particular, African societies continue to heave under the burden of preventable diseases, such as infections including malaria, HIV/AIDS, and tuberculosis, along with a high prevalence of malnutrition, which fuels high death rates from the above diseases. As such, placing a financial burden on these societies through non-priority globalized pandemic preparedness initiatives is an instance of misplaced priorities and intrinsically inequitable. Furthermore, the WHO is laying inordinate emphasis on pandemic preparedness in terms of the framework it used at the height of COVID-19. As such, it does not address the manner in which the most vulnerable in societies were dragged deeper into poverty from this centralized approach, with an emphasis on costly pharmaceutical interventions and discouragement of the use of affordable repurposed therapeutics, while ignoring building of resilience through nutrition and sanitation. And then 5, the fifth concern, is exaggerated urgency for the pandemic agreement and amendments to the IHR. The WHO has consistently asserted that urgency in enhancing the world's capacity to address pandemics through instruments such as an amended IHR and the draft pandemic agreement is justified by a rising risk and burden of infectious disease outbreaks from pathogens transferred from animals to human beings. However, a report from the University of Leeds released in early 2024 has demonstrated this to be a markedly exaggerated claim. According to that report, the evidence bases on which the WHO and partner agencies, including the World Bank and G20, have relied, actually demonstrate that the risk of naturally derived outbreaks is not currently increasing, and the overall burden is probably declining. Well, there's more to this, but we're really out of time. I did want to mention briefly, though, that as Paula indicated and alluded to earlier, one of the other offensive provisions of this proposed WHO treaty and agreement, the amendments to the IHR, is that it will actually incentivize gain-of-function research in the participating countries. It actually, because it mandates sharing of information, it basically urges member countries to do more of this gain-of-function research, despite the evidence that it was precisely this gain-of-function research that led to the emergence of the COVID-19 infections and the spread of it around the world. But that's all the time we have. Again, you can find these articles at merrillnass.substack.com. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.